Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of six live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Being a young MMA fighter, I gotta control what I'm doing in the cage.
Herschel Walker!
Yeah, it's over! Maximizing the debut!
You know, you gotta beat somebody, so beat me if you can!
I heard Michael Chandler!
Please tell me that's on video. I've never been happier.
I'm made for a fucking podcast. That's dangerous. Listen to me, we're at it.
Welcome to UFC Unfiltered. I'm excited for today. Matt and I have a very interesting show. Well, we hope. Good guess. So if it sucks, it's our fault. Herschel Walker,
ooh,
I've never met or spoken to, but I've been historically a Dallas Cowboy fan. And Herschel being traded many, many years ago built the Cowboy dynasty that people came to know with Aikman and Emmitt Smith. And I'd love to, I don't know exactly what guys they got, but they got, I think, six players for him.
Ooh!
Yeah.
I don't care about football, but.
But Herschel Walker, you have to. It's Herschel.
Jimmy?
Yes.
No, I absolutely do not have to, and you can't make me, but.
Yes, I will. I guarantee I'll change your opinion.
Well, listen, this is the deal. I care about the fact that Herschel Walker, in his 40s, how old was he when he was in Strikeforce? Do we know how old he was when he was in Strikeforce?
That I don't know.
Did our producers, okay, 47 years old, my age. Now, and you know my knees are shot. I don't know how his knees were, but that guy went in there 47 years old. And whip some ass. You understand?
And it's crazy because he was a
good.
So he played in the NFL.
Yes.
So he took beatings like in practice and the all that on your knees and on your legs and concussions and all the shit that happens when you're playing professional football. And then to do it at 47, it really is amazing.
I mean, I wanna see what a guy with such success he had in the football game, he's a legend in the game. To try to fight mixed martial arts at 47 years old is—I want to see what drove him to do that. I cannot. I'm interested in talking to him, and there's other things I want to ask him, but I'm not going to say it now. Do you know why?
Because you want to do it when he's here.
No, that's not why.
Oh,
because you are infamous.
I would not take your question.
You could be a. I love you.
But thank you.
You could be a little bit of a. Bully in here. No, as far as with the show, you can, and you know, I gotta stick up for myself. I have other things. Jimmy, how was your weekend?
It was okay. My Uber Eats order was canceled today, so I'm kind of in a rage pit just because they canceled it and there's no one to talk to. But aside from that, I'm okay, Matt. Up and down, you know how it goes.
Well, Jimmy, I was just using that as a prelude to get into my weekend.
Oh, good. I figured. I have a longer answer.
I want to pick you up my big arms. Just hold. I miss you. Does another man say that to you a lot? Anybody?
No one says that to me. No.
By the way, I'm very happy for your friend, Bobby Kelly, and his son, Max. because they reached out to me, not to throw this out of left field, but
they told me that. Yeah.
I talked to Bobby. He was looking for a place for jiu-jitsu to train. I recommended my good friend, Igor Gracie, and the famous Gracie clan. And little Maxie got his first stripe, and I'm hearing he's loving it.
Where are they located? They up by Bobby in Westchester around there?
Yes. I think it's, is it Rochester?
Westchester.
Let's call the whole thing.
No, Rochester's far.
Oh, I'm way off.
Yeah.
Is this where he lives? I don't know. But you got to ask him. But the point is, it makes me very happy.
Yeah.
Because I think that's going to help out. It's such a wonderful thing for kids, the jiu-jitsu. Herschel is ready.
Good news.
Don't you want to know about my weekend?
I do, but let's use Herschel as a teaser to...
I had guys defending belts. All right, we'll get to it afterwards.
Okay.
So shout out to James Gonzalez and Dennis Bazooka. But I'll hold out on that until afterwards.
Hello there.
How are you, Mr. Walker?
I'm doing well. Quit calling me Mr. Walker, man.
Does it make you feel old? Because it doesn't look like you age, my friend.
You look good.
It does make me feel old. You know, I'm a big fan of yours. I don't think you even know this. You know, I've been watching you for a long, long time. I watch you on The Ultimate Fighter and all that. So, but I'm not going to be kissing up. That's one thing I don't do. I don't kiss up too much.
Hey,
but
listen, I'm flattered. And are you in your house right now? Because
I am. Does it look bad? Does it look bad here?
No, it looks like a hotel lobby. It's giant.
Oh, my goodness.
No, it's my house. So I'm in my house. You know, I work a little bit, so I was able to buy me a nice house for a little bit. But I'm probably going to be, I'm moving out of this one. I just came back to get clothes and to pick up my dog. And then I got to go to work.
You got to go to work. What are you doing now? What is work?
Well, you know, I'm running for that U.S. Senate seat in Georgia. Yeah, I'm running for that Senate seat in Georgia. And, you know, something I never, never, ever, ever, ever thought I'd ever do. But after watching everything that go on in this country, I couldn't sit back anymore. I just said, I don't want this. I don't like this. And I'm going to fight. They said, people, we don't have racism. We need the police. We need to protect our military. We need to protect the border. All the things I think everybody want, but I think people are shouting so loud, saying the same thing rather than listening to each other. And I want to try to bring people back together to get out of all this racism, this woke theory that this is the greatest country in the world. So I'm running for that Senate seat to try to change people, to let them know that we can get along here in the United States of America.
You really you're a competitive guy too, because you played professional football. And then Matt and I were talking before you came on, at 47, you fought.
Oh,
and
gee, now you're doing this. 47. Quit mentioning my age. I'm really young.
Well, that's the amazing part, though. The fact that you are still in amazing shape and still so healthy and still good enough to fight professionally. It's incredible.
Well, you know, a lot of people don't know. When I was at Georgia, I fought in martial arts tournament. I would go and play Saturdays, and I would go to church Sunday morning. I fought in taekwondo tournament Sunday afternoon. People think I just got in martial arts, you know, when I started doing it there in MMA and at Strikeforce, but that's not true. I've been in martial arts almost all my life. You know, I grew up, my mom said I was big bone. And you know what that means? When they say you're big bone, I was a little bit fat, and I had a stuttering problem. I used to be bullied a great deal. And so I started watching those Bruce Lee movies and stuff. And so I went to this teacher at that time in my hometown. I think he was watching the same movies I was watching. So because the way he was teaching the class, I thought I was learning martial arts. And I wasn't learning martial arts. I was learning the stuff he saw on TV. But as I got a little bit older, I went to a very good taekwondo gym. And when I got to college, during off campus, I started going after class, going to taekwondo every day. And people never knew that. And so I fought in martial arts tournament the 3 years I was at Georgia.
Now, when did you first mess with the mixed martial arts?
Well, you know what's so fun about it? I was at home one day and I was watching, you know, I thought the mixed martial arts was like the tough man contest. But when they started putting the rules in it, the weight class and different things like that, because I remember watching the Gracie when he was fighting a guy at 300 pounds, you know, that was no weight class and all this. But when they started putting rules and all that in it, I said, man, I love to do this. And I went into training by myself. I went into training and hitting the bags. And I was in there doing all my martial arts. And I would go to my taekwondo class. And, you know, my teacher was Master Kim. And he really didn't like the mixed martial arts. And I wouldn't tell him I was training for it. And I decided I wanted to do it. And people thought I was crazy. And I want to thank Scott Coker because what he did for me would really save my life. He brought Bob Cook to California. He asked me to come out to California, and he had me to do what they call a matchmaker bout. I fought five different guys and five different arts, like I wrestled, jiu-jitsu, and all that. And I did well in all of it. So, and I was building my business at the time. So what I did, I gave my business over to my general manager, and I told him I was going to go out and fight. And I went out to AKA out in San Jose, California.
Yes.
And I was out there for months. And this is honest truth. And they would tell you, I train almost 6 days a week, almost 6 to 9 hours a day for like 11 months before I got my first fight. And no matter how much Taekwondo I learned, there's no way I could have fought in a cage if I had not went to a great gym. And that's what I tell people. And by going to a great gym, having Daniel Cormier and Cain Velasquez, Luke Rockhold, you know, those guys, they showed me how to fight. And I thank every last one of them. They're my brothers, Josh Thompson and all those guys. They're my family and stuff. And that's how I got started in the mixed martial arts.
Now, I'm sorry, Jimmy. I just want to know your first experience fighting in that cage. How did that fight end?
Well, you know, I ended up knocking him out. I think I ended up knocking him out. The referee was a stoppage. The referee stopped it. And I think he was a wrestler. But one of the things I think he helped me out a great deal because, you know, I was Taekwondo, which is stand up, and I boxed. I knew how to box, but I never really wrestled that much. And by having Daniel at the camp, you know, I learned to wrestle. And people don't know Cain is a wrestler. You know, Cain was very good at his hands, but Cain was a wrestler as well. So being at AKA, you know, I learned to wrestle a little bit. And so when I stepped in the cage, I think I was a little bit stronger. I think that's one thing I had over my first opponent. I was a little bit stronger. You know, we were about the same size. I weighed in about 214, so I was kind of little.
Yeah.
I had a little bit more skills, even though we've been fighting a little bit longer, but I had more skills. And it was funny because I love to compete. I absolutely love to compete. And people don't know, I love martial arts. I love mixed martial arts. And, I love mixed martial arts more than I like football. I had a chance to play football, but I love mixed martial arts. And that, you know, I know more mixed martial artists and wrestlers than I do football players.
Now, you're friends with President Trump. I know you guys know each other a long time. Did he convince you to run, or did you call him first, or did you make the decision? How did that come about, you running?
Well, you know, I'm a church guy. I grew up in the church, and it sort of was a calling in a sense that, you know, the last 15 years, every 3 weeks, I was at a military base somewhere in the world. So I've been to over 400 installations all over the world, and I see all young men and women do some amazing things for this country. They sacrifice so much. And, you know, I talk about kids, you know, you have to sacrifice to accomplish anything. And I think Matt knows this. If you're going to be a fighter, you better sacrifice a lot. You know, you can't be out clowning around. You better sacrifice and train. And I saw what was going on in this country. And this is way before President Trump even mentioned anything about me running. This was a calling, and I went into prayer with my wife and my pastor. I went into prayer with Pastor Tony Evans, and this was funny. I knew I had a calling to do it, but I started praying that God would bring someone else because, like, I was happy. You know, I had my company. I was doing well, but I said, I can't sit back and let this country be destroyed, the greatest country that's given me so much that I won't do it. I'm going to fight. And I decided I was going to throw my name in the hat. Whatever I have to do, I'm going to get out there and tell people, do not look bad at this country. This is the greatest country in the world, that you can find America's dream. And, you know, we got to come together and quit all the bickering and this and that and come together and get things solved rather than talking about it.
Every generation, you know, we think that the younger generation is annoying and they think that we suck. It's kind of the progress of people. But are you surprised by how much people who are like 16, 17, 18 have changed, like how differently they look at things? Like it's a bigger difference than I think than me and my father, people my age now and people who are 20.
But that's the way it's always been. It's always been. But right now in this generation here, we've given those young generation a huge, huge voice. You know, right now we're listening to them tell us how this country got to be. And we can't do that. You know, not to be mean, I think you do have to go with the times. Things do change. But if you got a minute, I'd give you a prime example of something that was so funny. I was doing an interview with someone, and they asked me and a white guy about if Washington Redskins should change their name, which I thought was very funny. And I said, why are you asking a white guy and a black guy if the Washington Redskins should change their name? Why don't you go as a Native American? Well, when I started doing some research about it, most of the Native American that I approached was okay with it and stuff. And I said, that's what's so funny is we're asking the wrong people about things they know nothing about. I said, we need to get back and getting the truth from people. And this young generation is our fault because we raised our kids to be better than we were, that we didn't let them go through the struggles we went through. And instead of we letting them go through those struggles, we always protected them. Well, right now, we got those babies that we protected now telling us how we got to get things done. And we just got to go along with them. But we also have to tell them they got to work. Everyone want to get to the destination without doing the journey. You don't work it like that. You have to work to get there.
Have you debated yet? Have you been in a how far along in the process are you?
This is probably, I've been in it about 8 weeks now. And, you know, my first quarter that, we had announced raising money, I broke almost every record because I think the people are starting to wake up. I think America is starting to wake up and say, you know what? They're right. This is a great country. You know, I'm not going to be solid. Right now, they've tried to separate America. Have you seen it? You've seen everything that they're doing. They're trying to separate people. And while they're trying to separate people, they're slipping things underneath your nose over here, telling you how terrible we're doing things. You know, whoever thought of defunding the police? Let's be real. Whoever thought of defunding the police? And people are really considering that. And you don't do that. And people know that. And then not protecting our military. That's the reason we're the greatest country in the world. We've got the best military in the world. Whoever thought of not protecting our military? We should protect our military. They protect us. And, you know, and I said, so that's the reason I got involved. I said, I wasn't going to sit back and not be called. You know, I don't care. People can call me names. And that's one of the things they do right now. If they want to keep you quiet, what is the first thing they do? They say that you're a racist. When they say that, they want to get you to shut up. And I don't care what they call me. But what they can call me is I'm an American. That meaning that I believe in America. I believe in what America is doing. And I think the criteria to run for office should be, do you love America? And then do you love the Constitution? If we can love those two things, maybe we can get out of all this other crap that they're doing right now, because I think it's terrible.
I tell you, I don't live in Georgia, but you'd have my vote in a heartbeat.
Well, thank you. I'm just happy to talk to you, man. Like I said, I've been a big fan. I watched your fighters come up, you know.
Thank you.
I love martial arts. Whenever I can catch it, I'm like always. I got to know Dana a little bit.
It's so funny. It's funny. Speaking of fights, I just got back from Atlantic City. I had five fights. That's why my voice is like this. I was coaching, yelling. Herschel, let me bring it back to the fighting for 1 second. This is what I want to ask you, because you competed at the highest level in football, obviously. I was never really in team sports. The difference between your winning, let's say your first mixed martial arts fight, because I know what that feels like.
Yes.
Compared to winning any, you could point to any high profile game.
Yes.
The difference, is there a difference at all?
No, it is a little bit of a difference. Like winning a fight is almost like when I was running track. Even though you train with the team help you to get there. But when you step into that cage or that octagon, you're there by yourself. Now, all the training you have learned, you better remember all that, but it better be like nature. No meaning, you better not be thinking about it. You better be reacting to it. And you know the team has brought you there, but you got to fight. You know, one of the first things I did when I was walking down the ramp to get into the cage, it was funny because I was really cool. I was cool walking down, and I stepped into the cage. And when they closed the door, the first thing I said is, wait a minute, I'm in a fight. Right. Hey, you know, you forget this is a fight. This guy crossed the cage and finna come over. He's finna punch me. He's like, do you think this is not, and this guy been trained. It ain't like he's gonna go punch. He's been trained. But then all of a sudden, the athletic thing comes back and it hit me and said, okay, I'll be your hunkerberry. You know, I tell people, guys, I didn't just show up just to show up. I show up to win. I love this stuff. And so I think it's like a human chess match. And you make it say that. MMA is like a human chess match. Like everyone been trained so well, you know what the guy's gonna do. You gotta stop him, but you gotta be better at it than he is. And it's just and I tell people, guys, they don't know how hard it really is. You know, people think it's easy, and that's what I said. You know, I was in Taekwondo for 30 something years, before I decided to go fight. I was a fifth degree black belt, but there's no way I could have brought Taekwondo into that cage and fought with Taekwondo with not learning some MMA. I would have been destroyed. And I said, by learning MMA and mixing my Taekwondo in, I think made me a little better. And, you know, and I, so I say Bruce Lee, when he said you sometimes mix all the different things, I think it makes you better. And I will say this here, I tell guys this all the time. I'm not telling you you have to be a great jiu-jitsu, a great wrestler, a great this, a great that, but you better know it all. Because if you like it on some of it, you're going to get beat. Because there's some guy that's going to be good at something. You better know how to do something to get out.
Have you kept up with Greg Hardy at all, another ex-football player?
I have. Yeah, I have kept up with Greg. And, you know, I was happy to see him. I'm happy to see football players that have decided to do that. And I think Greg, you know, my hat is off to him. But like I said, this is hard. People don't know how hard it is. This is, you know, and you may laugh at this. You know, I danced ballet for a couple of years. Ballet was harder than football. Ballet, because you use different muscles. You really don't already use. And I thought ballet was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life until I did MMA.
Did you get the idea of that? Sorry, Matt, from Lynn Swann. I know Lynn Swann did it, and that's one of the reasons he was able to do what he was able to do.
Well, you know, so funny, I didn't even know Lynn Swann danced. I danced because I was trying to work on my flexibility for martial arts and stuff. And then I learned Lynn Swann to dance. So when I did the martial arts, I was so sore. I never been so sore in my life. I was sore all the time. But what's weird about it is I loved it. I loved to train. And you know, I want to thank Kane and Danny and all those guys. I trained Harvey Mendez and Bob Cook. Because let me tell you what, that was the best time of my life, to be there with those guys. And it's like a family. You know, some of the guys, they didn't have much. That's what's so funny. You know, fighting is a tough job. It's a tough business. But, you know, they show up every day. They step in that cage and they take their lumps. And you know, it's tough. But, you know, they love each other. And that's what's so great about it.
Now, when you're doing the ballet, what's the attire? Are you wearing?
I look good in tights. I look good in tights. You know, I had the tights on, but I look good. But you know what? The reason ballet was so tough is people see your face. In football, you know, you're hiding behind that helmet, and you have a team out there that's protecting you, so you get away. But in ballet, you're up on stage, and I danced with a young lady, so my heart was about to pump out of my chest because you know you have a huge audience out there, and they can see you. So if you screw up, they see you screwing up. Same as MMA. You know, you got a guy finna to punch you in the face and you get punched in the face and you can't take it and you turn away and you trying to, people see that. And then you got your boys, you have to be accountable for it because they got to talk about you. And in today's world, they got YouTube, they got everything. So you do something really, really stupid and look silly in the cage or in ballet, you know you're going to be on YouTube. So everybody going to put you on YouTube, they're going to put you on Twitter, they're going to put you there. So the whole world going to see you screwing up. So my thing is, you better go out there and win and knock him out. So you won't be the one on YouTube. He's on YouTube. You're the one looking good.
With the ballet, what was the reasoning behind that? I heard athletes doing that to help.
Well, you know, so when I started for flexibility. I wanted to help my flexibility out because, you know, I was sort of stiff. And even though I ran track and all those things, I got into it for my flexibility. And a couple other guys got into it at the same time. And what was strange about it is I remember this one Friday afternoon, we were going to go to practice. I happened to show up. They didn't show up. So now I'm at practice, the only guy there. And I'm like, oh, crap, I want to sneak out. And all the people say, oh, no, you can't leave. You're the only guy. And I'm like, oh, Jeff, I started feeling guilty. And I remember as a little kid, I always told myself, I never quit at anything. I said, I would never quit at anything. If I started, I got to finish it. And that's why I tell people today, I don't care if you start something, at least finish it. Don't quit. You quit today, you'll quit tomorrow. So I went ahead and finished it. And then when I got to Dallas, I remember the Fort Worth Ballet came to me and they asked, you know, they knew that I danced, if I do a Christmas special for them. And I'm like, no. But then I said, well, I said I'd do it. So I ended up doing dancing with them for a little bit and stuff and helped to raise money for the Fort Worth Ballet. And I'm not going to say I'm a great dancer, but I look good. I, you know, and I'm glad that I did it because I think it built character.
First of all, do you remember the first time you got to use Taekwondo on a bully. Do you remember the first time somebody didn't know you had been training?
Well, I never have, because, one thing I learned, when I was fat and overweight, kids used to bully me all the time, and I started learning martial arts. And I learned that martial arts is an art. It's not for fighting. You learn art to protect yourself. And to be honest with you, if you got to fight with someone, you really don't know martial arts. You ought to be able to get out of it. Martial arts just to defend yourself. And then I really didn't want to fight no one because I didn't want to hurt anyone. But then I wasn't going to get hurt either. So I never really use it. People always want me to show them certain things. And I don't really get into that a lot because I said people don't realize if you don't know what you're doing, you can hurt someone. Because this is pretty serious. You put somebody in like a redneck choke and just choke them out. You don't realize you can hurt someone. But it's good to know. And now, I encourage every kid in America, if they can go to a good martial arts class or an MMA class, I think that'll be great for them because it builds character. Got nothing to do with fighting. I think it builds character, and that's what we need today.
It does. Character, confidence, and the way it changes people's swag. Like, they might not get messed with just because you could sense.
Yes, that's exactly right.
The way they carry themselves. I've seen
you have confidence. You have confidence, and I think that's what it was with me because people don't know when I was in middle school, like way in kindergarten, not kindergarten, but preschool, I didn't speak for 4 years of my life. I never spoke in a classroom. I used to have a stuttering problem. And because I was bullied a lot, I was scared to death of everything. And the way I cured myself made people pick on me. So it made people pick on me. And I remember the last time I got beat up, and that's what woke me up. I got beat up in the eighth grade by this kid. I still can remember his name and stuff, but I got beat up by him. And what's fun is when I went home, that was the day I started training. I started training and my whole life changed, but my swagger changed.
Yeah.
It changed and made me stand up a little straighter, made me look at people in the eye, not made me shy away because sometimes people pick on the weaker people. And that's what's sad to me. And that's the reason today I decided I don't want to be a part of nothing like that.
How did you get over the stuttering?
I used to sit in front of a library, in front of a mirror. I went to the library, I got books. And one summer, I sit in front of a mirror, and I read to myself. I read aloud. Like, I get there, and I just read aloud over and over and over and over and over. And what it does, it built confidence. One of the biggest problems that I had no confidence. So I was afraid to read and stuff. And so my confidence went to haywire. And something that was really funny, I got to Dallas. And I don't know if you know this, but I was a pretty good student. But I got to Dallas and people, you always reading in front of kids. And, I'm a good reader. I can read now. I went to college. I can read. So they wanted me to read to these kids. So all of a sudden, they said, Hirsch, you're going to read Dr. Seuss to these kids. Well, I didn't practice Dr. Seuss because, Dr. Seuss is a kid's book. I can read Dr. Seuss. Well, when I went in and read Dr. Seuss, Dr. Seuss' way of pronouncing words are different than the way we pronounce words. And all of a sudden, I almost converted bite to when I was a little kid, because let me tell you what, when I was looking at some of those words, I was like, what in the world is he saying? But it's the funnest thing in the world, because you better, if you got to read a Dr. Seuss book, you better practice that before you go into before you go in front of a class to read it.
Isn't it crazy? Then you're speaking at the Republican convention years later, right? As a kid, you stutter, and then you're speaking on, and that was live, yeah. Right?
They taped it. And let me tell you something funny about that, speaking at that Republican convention. Everyone thought that President Trump and I have been friends since 1982. Little Ivanka and little Donald, I took them to Disney World, SeaWorld. They traveled with my family. So that's the reason I've known President Trump that long. And we don't just have we have a family friendship. It's not just a friendship. We have a family friendship. Well, he never, not one time, we've been friends the whole time, his kids and I have been friends this whole time, not one time, with all this stuff going on, the President Trump asked me to speak for him. Now, we've been friends. We've been talking this whole time. Now, I'm black. I think y'all see that. I'm black. Not one time did he ask me to speak for him. I volunteered. I called his people and I said, guys, I'd like to say some words. And they were shocked that I say something. And I wanted people to know, I've known President Trump since 1983. And I said, it's so funny that he's treated me fair the whole time. And to be honest, he's not a racist. you know, everyone have problems. And yeah, he may have said some things, but people take things, they take them out of context. This guy, I don't care who a color you are. And, you know, people don't even know the things he's done for the African-American community. And then the thing is, even today, and I'm not here to blow President Trump horn, but look at the policy President Trump set compared to what's going on in this country today. Let's be real here. And people don't even want to acknowledge that. But I'm saying, guys, you got to acknowledge what the truth is. And that's what we got to do. What is the truth? The truth is, a man with one heck of a president when he was in office. You see what's happening right now with the gas prices, with the way we're not protecting our military citizens. Mm-hmm. They're scared to go outside at night. They can't go to the grocery store. Everything now is going up. The supply chain is kind of crazy. So President Trump didn't have that when he was the president.
Did you get flack for speaking up for him, or did people were people more responsive than you thought they would be?
Yeah, it was a combination of both. There's some people that gave me flack. There's some people that they were okay with it. But you know, I don't care. One thing about it is, you remember, I was bullied when I was little, so I don't care what people say about me, because what I want to do is say the truth. You know, I have a family. I have a family, and I have some dignity about me that I'm going to tell you the truth, whether you like it or not. Because one of the things about it is, you know, I grew up in South Georgia. I went to church. I love my parents. I love God. And I said, you know, I don't have the answer to man. I have the answer to God. And if I don't help my fellow man, what kind of person am I? And God has helped me so much. And you're going to tell me I can't reach back to help someone else by telling them the truth or trying to help them? Because we got to be honest here. We have to help each other or we're not going to make it. You know, during this pandemic, this was a terrible, tough, tough time. Everyone sitting in their house, that's a terrible time. And we should be calling people, making sure they're okay, calling the neighbors. And, you know, my wife and I, we did that. We got out and we'd knock on someone's door. We may stand by distance just to see if they're doing okay. Just to let them know that we're here. You know, we're here if you need us. And that's what people need. We need to love each other and quit all this fight.
Did you develop any weird, like, habits or things that you didn't think you'd do in the pandemic? Because it's over a year, everybody just kind of being stuck. Was there anything you found yourself doing? You're like, I never thought I'd be doing this.
Well, you know, I don't sleep much. And I sleep maybe 3 hours a night. I eat one meal a day. Well, I've gotten where I sleep.
Do you really?
Yeah, I sleep even less now than I ever. So, you know, something that I'm going to tell you, something that really hurt me is, and I want to name the young lady. I was on a call, you know, not everybody doing Zoom. So I'm what you call, I'm not computer savvy. I still have AOL as my email account. I still have an AOL, but something that made me change my viewpoints on things. I was doing a call with on the president council, I was doing a call. And at the end of the call, a young lady, because I said, guys, we want to call each other, make sure everybody's doing well. Because, you know, all of us are staying in the house, not able to get out and stuff like this. And at the end of the call, there was a young lady that's in a wheelchair. And she got off the call and she said, Herschel, now they know how I feel. And I said, what are you talking about? She said, you know, I'm in my house all the time. He said, I can't go out. I can't do the things you guys are doing. And, you know, that hurt me so much because I never thought about that. I said, you know, we don't think about, there's people that are in wheelchairs that can't get out, that they need us to call them sometimes, say, how you doing, man? I'm thinking about you. Hey, what do you need? Or something like that, because it made me sad that I didn't think about that, because I go through my life, you know, blowing and going, you know, living my life and not thinking about others. I always thought I cared, and that gave me a new appreciation. So I think that's one thing that gave me, this pandemic gave me a new appreciation of people than I think I had before.
I'm a bad sleeper as well. Like, I can't sleep at all, but you sleep 3 hours a night voluntarily. And why do you only eat one meal a day? I can't stop shoving food in my fat face. How do you eat one meal a day?
Well, you know, when I was in high school, I was graduating early and I got out of school early. So I wouldn't eat lunch because I wanted to make that extra $3.25 an hour probably. So I wouldn't eat. So when I got that, so I just got where my body didn't require me to eat anything. So I ate one meal a day. And don't get mad at me, but I don't eat. And you know, I own a food company. That's what's going to freak you out. I own the largest minority-owned food company in the United States. And I don't eat hard. I eat hard of anything. I just don't get hungry. I eat what I like. I may have a honey bun and a Coke and I'm fine.
That's a typical Herschel Walker day of food?
Yeah, that may be it, because I'm always doing. So I'm not telling anyone out there to do that.
Right.
All the nutritionists are going to get mad at me. You got to eat right. Eat three meals a day. I just do it the way I do it because God loves Hershey's. I'm crazy, so he takes care of me.
Honey bun and a Coke.
Yeah, that's it. That's good. That's good. Good honey bun and a Coke. I'll be all right.
There are guys that can do that, though. Like there's the anomaly who will smoke until they're 90 and never have a problem with it. There's people once in a while, someone that can get away with it.
Well, let me tell you something really funny. You know, at playing at Georgia one year, I was doing after a game, I was doing an interview. And I don't know why some reporter said, hey, what's your favorite candy bar? Which, you know, stupid question. So off the tip of my mind, I said, Snicker bars. Snicker bars like this. I didn't know. Well, I started getting cases of Snicker bars in the mail. So my one meal of the day was just Snicker bars. So for like probably a couple of weeks, all I ate was Snicker bars. And I was fine. And then I was okay. You know, coaches, I'm healthy as a horse. So I think we can't stress ourselves out about everything. I think we stress ourselves, put so much stress on ourselves. We just got to eat right. Got to exercise, though. No matter what, you got to exercise and stuff. And I said, you'll be okay.
Well, Herschel, we thank you for coming on. I've liked you for so many years. I've been a fan, and it's good to talk to you. And what can people do to support your campaign if they want to support your campaign down there in Georgia?
Well, no, they can go to teamherschel.com, and they can support my campaign. And if they got friends in Georgia, you tell them to get out and vote. No matter what, vote for Herschel because he's the best one out there, and he can beat all the rest of them in the race, whether it's physically or mentally, whatever I need to do. But just go to teamherschel.com. And thank you, guys. I tell you what, I do. I love MMA. Yeah, I've been a big, big fan since it started. There's no lie. I've been a big fan since MMA started.
Well, you're an inspiration, Herschel. Thank you for coming on. And please come on again. And all our best with we're getting an office there.
Well, thank you. I say I'm going to win it. I told him I like Ricky Bobby. If you're not first, you're last. So I'm like Ricky Bobby.
Great movie.
All right. Thank you now. God bless you guys now.
All right. Have a good one, man. Take care. This podcast is brought to you by Neds, the official wagering partner of the UFC in Australia. Aussie fight fans, keep an eye out for this weekend's UFC pay-per-view event, Player Pump. Player Pump gives you a special fixed odds price for a fighter to win by markets like method of victory, round betting, and heaps more. You can even pump up your odds on the UFC by combining your favorite markets across different cards. The action doesn't stop with UFC. Neds has everything you need to take it to the Neds level, regardless of what you bet on. Neds Same Game Multi is now available on more sports than ever before. Blended is also brand new to Neds and available on all three racing codes. Blended lets you pick multiple runners in the same race at special blended odds. It's never been easier for you to be paid out as a winner. Take UFC to the Neds level. UFC markets exclude South Australian residents. Minimum blended odds, $1.10. Terms and conditions apply and are available on the Neds website. Remember to always gamble responsibly. Call 1-800-858-858. Looking for a new home or you want to save on your current mortgage? Visit rate.com and you could get massive savings with Guaranteed Rate, the official mortgage partner of the UFC. Rates are at a historic lows and you could land that dream home or refinance to potentially cut your current payments in about 15 minutes. Visit rate.com today to get started with Guaranteed Rate. Equal housing lender subject to credit approval. Savings, if any, vary based on a variety of factors. Restrictions apply. Company NMLS ID number 2611. NMLS Consumer Access.
What's up, boys?
Hey, Michael, how are you, brother?
Man, I'm just living the dream, you know?
Shit, man. I everybody can't wait for your fight with Justin Gaethje. I mean, talk about a fight on paper that just has fireworks written all over it.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm expecting, too. And those are the kind of fights I want to be in. So, like I said, I wasn't here for a long time. I was here to have a good time. So, Justin Gaethje definitely fits that bill.
What do you think of him compared to Oliveira? And you said, like, he's probably the craziest guy you fought because he's never in a boring fight ever.
No, he isn't. And I do think he is one of the craziest and scariest guys in the division. You know, most of the time it's blunder. Most of the time it's, building the fight up. Justin Gaethje, I truly believe, means it. You know, and you guys are the beneficiary. The fans are the beneficiary. Even myself looking for a guy to compete against, I'm a beneficiary. Justin Gaethje was one of the first names on the list that I wanted to fight. I said, I had my top five kind of hit list of guys that I, wanted to fight, wanted to compete against, wanted to test myself against. Justin Gaethje was on the top of that list. You know, obviously I wanted to make the best decisions I possibly could to get toward the title, because that was the ultimate goal. But, he's coming off a title fight loss. I'm coming off of a title fight loss. Both of our dreams have been shattered. The dream of holding UFC gold had been shattered in our previous fight. So I'm expecting the best Justin Gaethje, and I'm expecting my best performance. And here we go, just less than 2 weeks away.
Now, your last fight, when you were fighting for the title, like you mentioned, for Charles Oliveira, I mean, I was there live. It was a nail biter. And not to bring up, again, it's a little negative because it didn't go your way, but it almost went your way. I mean, shit, how long you've been in the game so long, a day or two, how long until you stopped not feeling sorry for yourself, being like, fuck, laces out and get back on track? How long
laces out? Yeah. Honestly, man, I love the journey of mixed martial arts. I love the journey. Matt, you went through it, many, many ups, many, many downs. And really, without the downs, you don't really enjoy the fruits of the ups, and you can't take in with stride and just grab a hold of all the beautiful things about this sport without also accepting those, setbacks, those tough times, those embarrassing moments. We've both gone through them. And they're in the public eye, the man in the arena. But, I will say, a lot of people that hadn't followed me until I came to the UFC, and I went through a rough patch back in 2013 through almost 2015. I lost three consecutive fights in a row, 688 days without winning a fight. That's a very, very, very long time. And a lot of it had to do with what was going on between my ears. I made a couple mistakes. I was embarrassed. So I wanted to hide from the media, hide from the gym, hide from the people, because I didn't want to show my face. I was like a dog who poops on the carpet, right? What do? They tuck their tail between their legs. They won't make eye contact and they want to walk away. And then all of a sudden I also made another mistake. I forgot how good I was just because I lost that fight. I attached myself to the word loser. I had a bunch of W's in my, Wikipedia page and on my record. And all of a sudden there was this big L. So I attached myself to that letter, that L. And then I just kind of found comfort in the self-pity of this jail cell of self-pity, where I was just like blaming other people. And of course, my first loss was to Eddie Alvarez. It was a razor close split decision. Could have went either way. It was the judge's fault. It was the referee's fault. It was this person's fault. It was that person's fault. And man, getting back on the horse right away, I lost that title fight in front of millions of people on May 15th, on May 17th, Monday morning. I had one of the biggest MMA YouTube channels come to my house. He's a guy who lived in Nashville's MMA On Point. I said, hey, we're sitting down, we're doing this interview, we're breaking down the fight. And I want to sit here with my hat in my hand, with a cut still on my eyes, faces poofy from the adrenaline and traveling and all that kind of stuff. And I want to tell the story of what it was like just 48 hours ago when a dream that was supposed to be realized actually became a shattering setback. So getting back on the horse right away, not hiding from it, not shying away from it, really helped me mentally. So the next day I did another podcast in studio, talked about the loss. I wanted to get out to you guys, to the fans, to the media, to everybody. Hey, yeah, I lost, but I am not a loser. Failure was on May 15th, and it was an event. It is not a person, and I'm going to move forward. So, man, truthfully, hate to act like, the loss wasn't tough, shed some tears, didn't sleep a little, a couple nights it would hit you and then you talk to people too. And it's no, like what you just said, Matt, I was this close to winning that fight so I don't know if that's a good thing, cause it shows that I'm one of the best in the world, or if that's a bad thing, cause I was that close to capturing UFC gold. But man, I'm over it and I'm excited to compete again.
Knowing that Justin also dealt with the same thing too, you're both kind of going into it the same way. Do you think he's concerned about your wrestling? Because he did make a comment that he thinks it's going to end in a knockout unless you turn into a bitch and turn into a wrestling match. But whenever I hear a fighter say that, that to me says that like he'd prefer not to wrestle.
Yeah, I am a very confident person, but I do have zero ego. I'm going out there to win a fight. I'm going out there to be a complete mixed martial artist. I believe I have the tools and the skill set to take anybody down in the division, to knock anybody out in the division, to out grapple, to out strike, to out maneuver, to out cardio, to out tough anybody in the division. So where the fight goes, it will go. There's no, you know, there's no secret. Justin and I are both Division I All-Americans in wrestling. Both of us have a lot of spectacular knockouts on our highlight reels. So we are very much cut from the same cloth. Small town, middle class wrestling families came in to the UFC after winning world titles outside of the UFC, kicked down the door to the lightweight division and have both fought for titles. This is about as evenly matched a fight as you possibly could get. So where the fight goes, it goes. I'm going to touch them everywhere. So we'll go from there. We'll see what happens.
It's funny though, because when I hear Jimmy say that and he's quoting Justin, he's obviously baiting you. I mean, you're not an imbecile. He's obviously, if you look at his fight with Habib, you know, he can't sit there and call Habib a bitch. He put him unconscious. You know what I mean? Literally put him unconscious with the grappling. So, I mean, it's smart by him to be like, the first one who shoots is a fucking sissy. But at the end of the day, it's about taking the other guy out by any means possible.
Yeah, you know, and the beautiful thing about mixed martial arts is, you know, if you've never done it and you're a fan of the sport, and even if you know the sport really, really well, you still think that we all got a game plan and we're going to stick to that game plan, and there's game plan A and game plan B and game plan C. But you got to realize you're fighting another guy your size with two arms and two legs who has been training for months to impose his game plan, to do what he wants to do. So you got to make moves on the fly. I'm not a guy who makes the right decisions all the time. A lot of times I make ill-advised yet entertaining decisions inside the octagon, inside the cage. So does Justin. So we're going to see how the fight progresses. All I know is for 15 minutes, I'm going to be looking for a finish. For 15 minutes, he's going to be looking for a finish. Everybody, the fans and everybody watching and tuning in is going to be the beneficiary of two guys who are willing to go out on their shield. So, yeah, we'll see how the fight goes. Either way, I know I have the power to knock him out. I know I've been training to knock him out. I've been training in my sparring sessions to be the most dangerous that I've ever been on the feet. So we'll go from there.
Now, you were dropping some knowledge as far as getting back on the horse when you had those losses, and you said you were at first like blaming everyone else, and then you had to sit down and look at it, honestly. Now, did you have any help with that? Did people get mental coaches and stuff? Because what you said was very knowledgeable. I mean, did you have any help with that? Or is that just something you came up with just by going through it?
A lot of it was self-education, self-motivation, self-awareness enough to kind of put the pieces of the puzzle where they needed to be. But I did actually hire a psychologist or a psychiatrist or something. He was actually like a family and marriage and children counselor, but he worked with a couple guys in San Diego. I was in San Diego at the time. So I sat on his couch and talked to him. I got a lot of limiting beliefs, man, a lot of limiting beliefs that were ingrained in me, that are a part of my family tree, all these different things that we tell ourselves. I was told a story of who Michael Chandler was going to be. I was told a story of the path that Michael Chandler should take. I was told a story and told where the limits were instead of talking about where the possibilities were. And there was a lot of stuff that I had to get over and get through. And a lot of those losses, that first loss especially, reinforced, yeah, the media was right that I was just going to be a flash in the pan, or these other people were right that I was just going to be I'm a one-dimensional fighter, or I'm this or I'm that. It reinforced those things. And this is what we always do as human beings. We have this confirmation bias that we can set aside our fears and our doubts and our insecurities so long until we take an L or we take a setback or we have a subpar performance. And then those voices, those negative voices, are the loudest ones in the room. So that was my first step. And then a couple of years later, I did. I hired a mindset coach named Jim Hensel. And actually, for him, for our process, it wasn't how do I become more mentally tough? How do I become more strong? How do I get more motivated? It was more an actual all encompassing. Who is Michael Chandler? Where are his doubts? Where are his insecurities? Where are his strengths? Where are his weaknesses? And what is the mantra for my life? What is my 10 things about me that I truly, wholeheartedly, 100%, unequivocally believe about myself? And then I meditate on those things every single day. And I remind myself of those things every single day. And then they show up in my training. They show up in my finances. They show up in my conversations. They show up in the room with me. They show up where my feet are. And most importantly, they show up when I'm standing barefooted on a UFC canvas when I go out there and compete.
How did he get you to recognize some of that stuff? Was it like a coach like that? Is it like therapy in a way, or does he just teach you to ask certain questions? How did he do that?
The second guy where I found out who I was, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, really, he has his own, you can check it out. It's mayhemmindset.com, I believe. So he actually, Mayhem is in reference to Rich Froning, who is the world's, fittest CrossFit fit man 4 years in a row. He is now he does team now, but he's still one of the most fittest guys on the planet. He was his mindset coach. And it's hard too, because he's like, he calls it a mindset coach, but it's really not. You're not really trying to do anything with your mind to change your perspective other than the introspective, how you see yourself and who you are. And really, he's got a big, long 16 chapter kind of binder that we go through. And there's a lot of journaling and there's a lot of lists. And he calls it a game. You're going through, we fight. I hate when people call it a game. Hey, you going to the game? Are you going to watch the fight? It's so, the football's a game and baseball's a game, and fighting's not really a game, but it is in a lot of senses. So he calls it, each game has a different section, a different chapter. And we kind of went through it and really just kind of found out who I was. And you have to have the self-awareness enough to admit your faults, because only by admitting your faults can you get past those things. Can you, you can only fashion yourself through the fire by going through it, but it all still starts with the self-awareness enough and the humility enough to say, hey man, I got some problems in this area and that area. And it's showing up as a father. It's showing up as a husband. It's showing up inside the octagon. It's showing up in my bank account. It's showing up in all of these different areas. So man, I'm an athlete by trade. That's how I make my money. But the most important thing for me is to become the best man that I possibly can be. So if I become the best man I possibly can be by knowing exactly who I am and implementing these different tactics and going through this process, it's going to show up and I'm going to be able to put my best foot forward inside the octagon.
Jimmy, after having Herschel Walker on and now having Michael Chandler on, dude, I'm fucking motivated. I'm going to curse less starting right now.
Hey, it's okay. Yeah, man, you're from New York, dude. You can cuss as much as you want.
Michael, now you're concentrating on you now. You got a lot of things, we got eyes on the goal. Do you coach at all or no?
I don't. I actually, I definitely want to coach when I'm done fighting, I believe, whether it's in a mass capacity. I'm definitely I want to speak on stages to a lot of people, but I want to, I definitely want to have an online presence where I can coach some people. But I did do about an 8 week, no, it was actually 3 months straight after this last fight. I had probably 20, 30 people in there on the Zoom calls every other week. And we just kind of talked about some things. I had a lesson plan and then really just talked to people about their doubts, their fears, their insecurities. It's so important, especially as men do not want to admit these things, but we have to, if we want to become the best men we possibly can be.
Well, I don't know if you got anything planned for your retirement, what your next chapter will be, but listen, move over, Tony Robbins. I'm getting fucking motivated. I said something about cursing. Getting freaking motivated by Michael Chandler. So, hey man, I stay up with that stuff. I think you're great.
Well, it's selfish. It's selfish too. I mean, that's what I tell people too. It's, you could sit there and say, man, that's commendable. You got on that big YouTube channel right after the fight, broke down the fight, watched Charles Oliveira knock you out and relive it in front of millions of people. But yeah, I did it for the fans and I did it for the onlookers, but really I did it for myself too. It's selfish. I went through these processes selfishly because I am worried about myself more than I'm worried about anybody else. And because if I can make myself the best man possible, then I'm going to be successful in every single area of life. So it's helping people by also helping yourself. So I do love the coaching aspect. I've had many coaches, other coaches in my past, and I'm actually interviewing one right now, talking to one right now that I'm going to hire as a financial coach as well.
Yeah. Financial coach is, definitely got to trust that guy. That's scary too. Cause how do you know, do you give them a little leeway to make a mistake here and there? Cause finances are not, it's not science.
So I have my wealth management company and they do investments. I'm saying, hey, dude, teach me how to change my mind about money. I was taught some things about money that are bass ackwards. I was taught some things about money that, that precluded me from making more of it. Even to this day, I still don't believe that I deserve believed to be a multi-millionaire billionaire. And I believe everybody should believe that about themselves. And money isn't the end all be all. It's not going to buy happiness. You can't buy happiness, but without it, without a lot of it, you can't bless a lot of people with it. So this would more be a mindset money coach, him teaching me about money, how the world works, how bank works, how the stock market works, how real estate works. Just learn from as many people as you possibly can.
Are you a good saver? My mother was pretty good with money, so I became pretty good at money because my mom was. My dad would spend, you know, a lot more recklessly than my mother. Are you good at saving and stuff like that, or do you tend to just want to go out and blow it?
Man, I never blow it. I mean, I my wife loves vacations and experiences. Those are her two favorite things. So we have vacations, we do experiences. But every other dollar that we don't need to live on, we want to live in a nice house that makes her happy. And then other than that, I want to buy real estate. I'm invested in the stock market. I have a lot of money put away for, in retirement vehicles, which also has an added tax benefit, that has helped me shelter a lot of taxes by deferring those earnings and investing that into my retirement. So there's a lot of different things you can do, and a lot of different ways, different companies and LLCs and all kinds of different things you can set up. And I've done that over the last 13 years, and I've been very blessed to have some really great, smart people around me. But you know, I'm an athlete, so I get good coaches around me to make me a better athlete. I get good advisors around me, and mentors around me to make me a better man, a better saver, and a better investor.
Yeah. And you're also making good decisions, though, because a lot of athletes, a lot of musicians too, get people around them who give them bad financial advice and they wind up ruined right at the end of their career. They have nothing. So you're also making smart decisions too.
Yeah, I believe. I mean, of course, there's a thousand different decisions that I maybe could have made that maybe would have made me more money or maybe more financially secure. But I'm constantly just being led by connections that I am making. And even now, too, it's just a testament to the UFC. I spent the last, 12 years prior to fighting in the UFC, connecting with and creating really great relationships that I would eventually, once I went to the UFC, came to the UFC, got the biggest platform that I possibly could. Now I can, for lack of a better word, cash in on those relationships that I've made at a much bigger level, on a much bigger stage, and a lot more beneficially. So that's worked out really well for me over the last 12 months. I've only been signed with the UFC. I think our first conversation we had was about 12 months ago. I've only been signed with the UFC now 13 months. It seems like it's been 2-3 years because so much has happened, but I'm still very new to the UFC. So it's been an awesome process thus far, and the platform's just huge.
Well, Michael, good luck. Justin Gaethje, this is a tremendous, tremendous fight. And it's a dangerous fight for both of you, obviously, because you do both have the ability to win. So we'll talk to you after the fight on November the 6th at the Garden. And it's a big stage and a great, great fight.
Yes, sir. Can't wait. This is going to be a fun one. So everybody tune in.
I'll be there with Rachel now. So I'll see you there, Mikey.
There you go. Let's go, man. I appreciate you guys.
All right. Be good, buddy. Take care.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
This episode of UFC Unfiltered is brought to you by P3, the official protein snack of the UFC. P3 portable protein packs are a savory and crunchy combination of three dynamic sources of protein from meat, cheese, and nuts. Each P3 pack contains up to 13 grams of protein, and they come in great tasting combinations like turkey, almond, and Colby Jack. P3, three dynamic ways to fuel your day with protein packed meat, cheese, and nuts, because three is better than one.
Emmy award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
He's very motivating, Jimmy.
Yeah, he is. I'm more motivated by Herschel, though. I'm going to eat a honey bun and drink a Coke and hope I get abs.
Oh, what a dude, what a lovely gentleman. I mean, yeah. I just liked him a lot. Because he was a fan of mine. Jimmy.
What?
It's not because the guy was giving me compliments.
I hope not.
No, not at all. It didn't hurt. But
it didn't hurt his case.
Definitely didn't hurt his case, and he has my vote.
By the way, him and Gaethje, Matt. Sorry, Rose against Wiley is a co-main. That rematch, Kamaru Covington is the main. Justin Gaethje challenged a third fight. I mean, what an amazing fucking card this is. Quinta Bobby Green is the main event of the prelims. This is a great, great card.
Jimmy, what did you think of Marvin Vettori?
Vettori is
awesome.
I was also impressed with Paulo Costa and the ability to go five and that body kick, which was devastating. But fucking Vettori is just, I mean, literally, you can't knock this guy. He shows nothing on his face if he's hurt. Like, I would have no idea if he was hurt unless he told me.
Dude, those kicks could have dropped the fucking horse.
Tremendous.
You know what I mean? I mean, the chin on him. And even he's like, yo, we're taxing on my forearms. That could break a fucking arm.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't pull him. And it's weird because after that first round, I'm like, all right. I say by the third round, he's going to be done. And the fifth round, he came back stronger than ever. Paulo.
Really great, great fight. Vettori definitely won. I thought that the point he took, was a little much. I don't know if he needed to take that point on the first. He had warned him a little bit about the fingers, but I thought that was a little bit much for Herzog to take that point immediately. But you know, I'm sure a lot of fighters were happy that he did it.
My thing is this: if it's going to affect the fight. And you've warned the guy already. Hey, man, what are you going to do? Because I've seen him do that again. He did that in the Alex Kills Caceres fight.
Well, Choi, but was that him or a different ref?
Wait, which?
Against Caceres against Choi.
I believe it was the same ref, but you can check.
Oh, yeah, he took a point. But that was a knee to a downed opponent. I mean, that was a pretty square shot to the face. That was a little bit more avoidable, I thought.
Yeah, shit, man. I'm just telling you this. I'm impressed with Marvin Vettori because, and I mean, he basically fought a guy in a different weight, a totally different.
He did.
He was a middleweight fighting a light heavyweight. So he took out one of the most dangerous dudes and he fought him up a weight class. Fought up a weight class, and he didn't bitch about it. And a lot of guys, I mean, he got the 20% or whatever it was, but. That was impressive.
Yeah.
Because he didn't have to rely on the grappling either. You know what I mean? Which we thought he would be, but the guy was actually too big for him to take him down, to keep him down, which was wild.
Yeah.
Vettori, I give him all the credit in the world, man. I think what he did needs to be applauded.
Yeah, I agree. And you're right. Costa was so strong getting back up. It was just watching him stand back up with a guy like Vettori on him was also impressive. But Marvin just didn't stop coming. Marvin threw some beautiful heavy shots, and he took a lot of shots, and he didn't seem fazed at all.
He didn't. And I was impressed with Alex Caceres also.
Tremendous win. Yeah.
He was the underdog in that fight. And for him to take out Choi that way, in that second round, he took out, it was a split second back take. And it was so beautiful the way he did it. And he was peppering him with strikes when he was up there. And I have to, we have to bring up Francisco Trinaldo fighting at the first time in the UFC at 170, welterweight. And Dwight Grant was in that fight.
Yeah.
It was a good fucking fight when it was, yeah. And I agree with the decision. It was a split decision. I like that friend. In the first round, he had a hard time finding his range versus the lanky Dwight Grant. But then he did. Once he found it, he found it. And he was adding, he was landing that left hand. And the kick would come up out of nowhere. And the grappling made a difference in that last round. So, shit, man, I enjoyed the heck out of that fight.
Gregory Rodriguez over Junior Park. What? Because Park, I thought, was landing some really, really heavy shots, and he was hurting Rodriguez, and I think he had him hurt at the end of the first round and into the second. And Rodriguez, man, was he really pounced on him and threw a couple of beautiful uppercuts. That was also a great, great finish.
Yeah, fights like that, I love where it's like, oh, this ain't going. Even with Alex Caceres, it's like, yo, this ain't.
Just slugging it out. Just both of them standing there slugging it out. Just great.
And you're thinking it's going to end a certain way, and all of a sudden the guy pulls it out. It's like, oh.
That's right.
I love that stuff. Again, a fun card, Jimmy. Let me mention also about my weekend before we get out.
Yes.
Because, you know, as you can tell, my voice.
Get a little scratchy.
It's a little scratchy, man, because we had six guys fighting over the weekend. I was in Atlantic City. I did a road trip with two of our young fighters, good guys. Pumi, Pumi Nakuda. It means no worries. I can't even sing because my voice is fucked up. But that's a
blessing.
Fuck. Pumi and Stephen Lee. It was Stephen Lee's birthday yesterday. Happy birthday, Stephen Lee. But we went on a road trip to AC, and we went 3-3. You know, a couple of decisions I think could have went our way, but I'm not going to bitch about it. You know, Lauren Brasha lost our fight by rear naked choke to a buddy of mine, Stevie's student. I forget. I'm the worst. Like, fuck. And I know the guy. Stop it. Let's just cut that out. No, we don't have to cut it out. Fuck it. Anyway, Lauren. I'm going to remember it the second I fucking hang up. But Lauren was doing great until she wasn't. She got taken down. The girl got her back and finished her. So props. But Lauren, it's her first fight in a while. She'll get back on the wagon. My buddy Christian Akela, I can't pronounce his last name right. I'll say whatever the fuck. Anyway, he's calling himself the Hungry Wolf. He was hungry. Maybe not hungry enough. All right. I thought he should have got the decision. But I don't think this kid should be fighting middleweight. He fought at middleweight. He should be fighting 170. Tough fight. I thought he should have won. He lost. Dylan Motello, my guy, he was undefeated. He lost his fight. You know, I think he's going to be back with a vengeance.
How did he lose?
He lost decision.
Okay.
And, you know, it happens. You know, came down to the third round, and he had to take down. But then the guy got up, took his back. And was on top. I basically had more ground control the last round. It came down to the last round.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's going to learn from that shit. And Damian Nelson, this kid's got a lot of – I didn't corner him because I just recently met him, but he's such a nice kid, and he's got such strict, slick boxing and striking. He won his fight, and he did fucking phenomenal. And I like that kid. I got to talk to him afterwards. I'm not just going to jump in a corner if I don't know the guy. But sure. He's got longos a bunch. And I just got to know him a little bit. And I think he's a sweetheart of a kid. And he had nothing but good things. He did phenomenal. And James Gonzalez and Dennis Bazooka both, you know, retained their Ring of Combat titles. So I was happy about that. You know, Bazooka fought on the Contender Series. But when he did fight on there, and I'm not making excuses, he was getting over his lungs were a little fucked up because of that COVID thing.
Oh, okay.
He's doing better now. He finished that fight in the first round like a fucking stud, you know? So listen, love all my guys. I was happy to see Chris Weidman again. I haven't seen him since that incident with him. So Weidman was down there cornering a fighter. I'm sorry, I forgot that dude's name, but he won his fight, some wrestling kid. But, you know, I was happy to see Chris because I haven't seen Chris. And we had the whole crew there, you know? And it was me, myself, Ally Aquinta, Ray Longo, and I just like, you know, being around the crew. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm happy to be around you, Jimmy.
Me too, buddy.
All right. Anything else you want to plug before my voice just fucking goes?
No, I'm good. I'm okay.
You're the fucking best. All right, Jimmy, listen, I love you.
I love you too, pal.
Well, good. You didn't hesitate on that. All right. So you don't want to plug anything? The fact that you're on Cameo.
I'm going to be in Philadelphia Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Helium Comedy Club. And the following week, Caroline's here in New York City. If you want to come see me, 4, 5, and 6, while they're having that great fight, I'll be at Caroline's. So probably won't be a lot of UFC fans at my show, but, you know, I can't wait to get back down to Philly, especially.
Jimmy.
Yes, sir.
This weekend, I'm having 2-time world champion Theon Davies. Am I saying it right? I'm pronouncing it right. Davies. She's phenomenal. And I'm having to do a little seminar at Sarah BJJ in Huntington. 6:30 to 8:30. All schools are welcome. And I like that. I like to bring in people that look like good people and they have good skill set. And my students can learn from them. We're very open-minded at Sarah BJJ. So that's going to be great. I'm probably going to have my daughters jump in that class too. So, you know, that's going on over at SarahBJJ.com.
And I hope your voice is a little better by Wednesday.
Thank you so much, Jimmy. And I'll talk to you then, brother.
Yeah, good. And thank you to Herschel Walker and Michael Chandler. And we'll talk in 2 days.
Goodbye, everyone.
Righto.
Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.